It's Tuesday, December 29th, 2020, and this is Zero Politics. Welcome to Zero Politics, my friends, your critical thinking course for politics. A place where you can be assured, and I promise you, I will always bring you some little tidbit, some little sample, some little clip, or just a thought and an idea related to the logical deconstruction of arguments being put forward by people on the left and the right to try to expose and help people expose the irrationality of their arguments, but also get people just used to thinking in those terms, to get people used to following the logic of arguments rather than doing what most people do on places like Twitter, which is basically just insult people. Like, we've gotten really good at that in the modern world. The other day I said something on Twitter and someone said, "Oh, that's an interesting way of showing you only have one brain cell." And granted, that is funny. And I do like to laugh. Okay. But it's just an insult. It just shows that you can't offer a logical argument. You can't actually, and I actually laid out a case, and when I do that, and that's what I tend to do, depending on, there are always times for joking around. Okay. And I'm fine for just, needling someone and having fun. But for the most part, I just like to stick to the logically valid sound arguments, people don't do that these days. And that's what this podcast is for. This podcast is just out there to remind everyone, hey, there are laws of logic. There are ways of thinking about things, rational ways of thinking. So slow down, hold your roll, and think about what you're saying. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about one of the logical fallacies that's often used in debate when someone is losing, their opponent is winning, they know that the merits of the case are against them, they know that they're not proving their case, their arguments are invalid, so they begin to change the definitions of words. They begin to change the definitions in their conclusion, or they change the goalposts, the final conclusion or goal that they're attempting to pursue. They start to change the rules, at the last minute to fit their argument, to make it so that their argument is true by default many times, which of course would be a circular argument or begging the question. But that's not what I'm getting to today. What I want to talk about today is just changing the goalpost, the old classic rechange. And I've talked about this before. It's to revise definitions as what was the AP in their style guide. If you listen to one of my previous episodes, you remember the AP decided to change their definition of the word protest. First, they said, don't focus on protest. They encouraged writers who try to follow AP guidelines to not focus on protests, not focus on the riots in protests, not to focus on it's like telling news reporters not to report the news. This is what we want you to do, guys. There's a lot of stuff out there that's going on that doesn't really fit our agenda. So we want you to just ignore that news, even though it's very newsworthy, like people firebombing buildings and cop cars and stuff like that sounds important. But we want you to just ignore that and focus on, the peaceful part of the protests. And of course, there were peaceful protests and violent protests going on with regard to BLM and Antifa and all that. But what they decided to do was tell people not to focus on that and then change the definitions of the word, change the definition of the word protest. And if memory serves, they even started changing the definition of the word riot. They, because people, journalists were using that word. So, okay, what is a riot? Well, a riot is it's kind of a peaceful way of showing you're really upset. When typically, historically, that's not what the word means. It normally means some kind of violence, either physically violent or violence towards property, that sort of thing, that sort of protest, that sort of behavior. So anyways, you start changing definitions when it becomes difficult for your side to win a logical debate. And that's what was happening in the U.S. with regard to BLM and Antifa. The protests were getting so violent that the left was having a hard time defending it. So they just started changing definitions so that their argument would be proven by the nature of the case, proven by definition. And that's what's happening again today with regard to the World Health Organization changing the definition of herd immunity. Why? Well, because herd immunity is starting to be seen on the horizon. Some regions, some communities are saying, you know what? We're starting to see the signs of herd immunity. And I'm not just making that up. Epidemiologists have argued this in papers, okay? Peer-reviewed scientific papers. So those who claim to be all about the science and following the science are in fact not following the science and are changing definitions of scientific terms so that they don't mean what they historically have meant by the scientific community. And they're doing it for political reasons, not for scientific reasons. So let me jump into my article here that's posted, by the way, at adamspeaking.com, where you can find everything for this podcast and the other podcasts I'm going to be starting, where you can subscribe and all of that. Everything's there, adamspeaking.com. Okay, so moving the goalpost, it's a classic logical fallacy that people use when they're losing a debate. When they're losing the argument, they simply change the conclusion that they're arguing for in order to make it easier to prove. When the government is having trouble convincing you to do something on logical grounds, they'll often change the definitions in their conclusion in order to better fit their argument. For example, if the government tells you that the protests are peaceful and not at all riots, but can't make that claim comport with the fact that there are police cars and government buildings being firebombed, then they simply redefine the term so that firebombing riots are now defined as peaceful protests. Now that they've defined peaceful protest as protests which include riotous behavior like firebombing buildings and beating the shit out of people, then they win the argument by default. See, we told you, peaceful protests. For nearly 100 years, the notion of herd immunity has referred to the natural process of a population becoming more immune to new infections as more people are infected, because those who've been infected and developed antibodies act as a buffer for those who've not been infected. The World Health Organization defined herd immunity, at least as of a few weeks ago, this way. Herd immunity is the indirect protection from an infectious disease that happens when a population is immune either through vaccination or immunity developed through previous infection. This means that even people who haven't been infected or in whom an infection hasn't triggered an immune response, they are protected because people around them who are immune can act as buffers between them and an infected person. So, it doesn't take a large percentage of people to become infected in order to cause herd immunity. In fact, according to many epidemiologists, many regions are already beginning to experience some of the benefits of herd immunity with COVID-19. In part because many more people have actually been infected and have immunity already than we previously thought. This fact has become a problem for governments around the world who want to impose strict rules and mandatory vaccinations. They simply can't have the facts regarding herd immunity getting in the way of their nanny states and dreams of a great reset. As they like to say, never let a good crisis go to waste. When people started pointing out that some regions are experiencing herd immunity and that such immunity will only increase more rapidly after a small percentage of the population is vaccinated, the World Health Organization and others realized that this might lead to the plebs getting their hopes up and imagining the dim light of freedom and self-ownership approaching on the horizon. What? We can't have them thinking they can just go outside of their own free will? However, since those who were celebrating the arrival of herd immunity were scientifically and logically correct, the World Health Organization had only one choice. Move the goalpost for herd immunity by changing the definition so that herd immunity becomes impossible unless you do as they say and take the damn vaccine, which is exactly what they did. They revised the definition stating that herd immunity, also known as population immunity, is a concept used for vaccination in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. They go on to say herd immunity is achieved by protecting people from a virus, not exposing them to it. Which, if you were paying attention to the historic common definition that we just quoted from the World Health Organization's own website a few months ago, that's kind of exactly what it means. Herd immunity can be reached by exposing people to a virus, and they become immune. That's what their own definition was until they started losing the argument. Then they changed it. They went on to say that with herd immunity, the vast majority of a population are vaccinated. So they throw that in there too, which is new. A vast majority of the population has to be vaccinated. So not only is it not possible to reach herd immunity through natural causes, people becoming infected and then building antibodies and then acting as a buffer for those who haven't yet been infected, On top of that now, not only do we have to have, not only does that not work, but it requires vaccination. It also requires, you know, basically complete mandatory vaccinations for everyone. So you see what they've done there. They've changed the definition. They've gotten rid of the idea that natural infections and people overcoming natural infections. Now, by the way, just a side note, if I were them, I wouldn't have changed the definition. I would just make the argument that because COVID-19 is more dangerous than other viruses, this would have been a better argument. Because it's more dangerous, we can't risk natural herd immunity. We have to do it through vaccination. But instead, they just decide to go on their website and change the definition entirely, which is quite suspect. So their new definition of herd immunity is both anti-science and anti-history. You can't find a definition in any scientific textbook that fits their new definition. They're all going to read like their old definition. In fact, they probably will quote the World Health Organization's old definition or the CDC's definition. Though I'm sure editors have gone to work updating their textbooks to protect their political overlords. Herd immunity is a natural process caused by immunity following infection and can be reinforced by vaccines, but has never been completely dependent on vaccines. Herd immunity is how many epidemics and pandemics were eventually defeated long before vaccines ever existed. And herd immunity today doesn't necessitate the use of vaccines. The World Health Organization's new definition simply doesn't comport with the term's historic scientific use. And that has many epidemiologists like Stanford's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya a little upset, to say the least. He, along with many others, are sick and tired of politicians and bureaucrats politicizing science. And so are the rest of the plebs who are being forced to follow unscientific-based directives by people who pretend to be, quote, following the science. It's kind of getting to the point where when someone says, follow the science, I have to question them. I have to ask myself, I think you mean you're following the junk science or you're just ignoring the science. It's gotten to that point, which is really pretty bad. People who follow the science shouldn't have to change the definitions of scientific words in order to fix their failing arguments. In fact, when they start changing definitions in order to fit their arguments, that's a clear giveaway that they aren't merely wrong, that they're lying, and they know it. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya said in a statement that, quote, the revised definition of herd immunity at the World Health Organization site is not actually a definition of herd immunity. It provides a nice description of how vaccines can protect people against infections and makes a sensible but obvious point that we should not intentionally infect anyone with the disease. He goes on to say, herd immunity describes the situation when, because of both natural immunity and vaccine-induced immunity, every new person infected with an infectious disease will pass the infection on to an average of one person or fewer. At that point, the number of infected people will tend to shrink. He says this is the end point of many epidemics and will be the end point of this COVID-19 epidemic. If the unelected bureaucrats who are rather arbitrarily mandating small business closures, school closures, masks, social distancing, and mandatory vaccines had a logical argument against those who are pointing out that herd immunity is on the horizon, then they wouldn't have to change the definition of herd immunity at the last second. People who are correct don't have to change definitions and redefine the conclusion or goals they or their opponents are attempting to pursue. People only move the goalpost when their opponents are winning and they're in danger of losing. So, the question naturally arises, what conclusions are they pursuing by moving the goalposts? Well, for one, they want to make herd immunity dependent on mandatory vaccination of the entire population. The obvious question is, why do we need 100% compliance if herd immunity only requires a portion of the population to be immune or vaccinated, so that those who are immune act as a buffer to those who aren't yet immune? Why do we need everyone to take the vaccine? If it doesn't require everyone, even according to their new definition, even their new definition doesn't get them out of the logical, unscientific hole they've dug for themselves. They want everyone to take the vaccine. Shut up, take the vaccine. That's their message. But even their new definition doesn't require that for herd immunity. Now, of course, they don't have an answer for this, and that's, you know, there isn't one, and that's why they're basically saying, shut up, slave, and take the damn vaccine so we can pay the pharmaceutical companies we're also invested into the tune of millions of dollars. Oh, I see. Yeah, follow the money. But it doesn't stop there. the longer businesses are shut down and people become dependent on universal basic income in the form of unemployment payments, the closer we are to what the World Economic Forum calls the Great Reset. But that topic is for another day. Meanwhile, you can go read the book they've written titled COVID-19 and the Great Reset. Unless you think that's just a conspiracy theory, that book was written by the leaders of the World Economic Forum. And yes, it's quite interesting to say the least. And you'll find that it's being quoted by the world leaders all around you, along with one of their favorite terms used to refer to the Great Reset, quote, build back better. When you hear that term being used, and it's being repeated in unison by hundreds of world leaders on an almost daily basis, know that it's all about the Great Reset. It's like a code word. It's like a dog whistle they're sending out to communicate with everyone else. We're on board. We're on board with the Great Reset. Let's build back better. And they know and agree with the fact that herd immunity would mean the end of their greatest hope for enforcing their Great Reset, COVID-19. COVID-19 is their savior. It works better than anything else for forcing a national and international economic reset. It's way better than war. They tried that after World War II. There was an economic reset. I won't get into the details, but they tried it with Bretton Woods and so on. Nothing creates dependency like a virus, like a pandemic. And this one isn't creating the kind of dependency they really want, to be honest. They would love it to be cause even more dependency. They want it to be worse, but it's just not bad enough. They need utter and total dependence. The financial establishment, okay, the oligarchs who really are the influencers of politics from behind the scenes in the world in which we live, the financial establishment has overextended itself. National central banks are nearing collapse, and they're in dire need of a new economic model to rescue their global agenda. Nothing worries them more than the end of COVID-19 right now. And I'll take that back. There's one other thing. Climate change. Climate change is a threat that they are using to unify the world in a way that they haven't seen viable previously. And I'm not just making that up. That's in their own literature, okay? Just look up the Club of Rome and the books that they've written on the subject. The name of their main book is escaping my mind all of a sudden. But in it, they talk about the use of climate change as a means to put forward many agendas, global political agendas that would never have gone over on the people had they not had the threat of an international global and existential kind of threat, something like a pandemic, something like climate change, or as Reagan once said, an invasion from outer space, an invasion from aliens. You know, he said that would be one thing that could unify all of mankind if we were being invaded from outer space. So these two things, climate change and a pandemic, are the two sort of global existential crises that they really rely on to forward various agendas. And read their book, The Great Reset. It's all about how we need to move to a future where no one owns any property, no one owns their own property, everything is rented. And guess who it's rented from? It's rented from the oligarchs. It's rented from the wealthy business class establishment. And you don't own anything anymore. And you live off of a universal basic income and so on. These are the ideas they want to put forward. It's a new kind of socialism mixed with a layer, a mask of free enterprise to a certain extent, which, by the way, was Mussolini's definition of fascism, the sort of Hitlerian, Mussolini-like fascism that they were putting forward and that they were actually pursuing and practicing leading up to and including the World War II period was exactly that. And those sorts of ideas and concepts are really behind the Great Reset and the global establishment's vision of an economic new order, an economic new world order, an economic order for the future, which they will always tell people publicly is something that's supposed to create more equity and fairness and so on. But then when you actually read their proposals, you realize there's no way it's going to bring equity and fairness. It's going to just create a massive two-class system with a massive underclass and a small oligarchy. And we could, you know, you might disagree with me on that. I don't know. But that's what I'm afraid of happening. And that's what I think is happening. And when I listen to the, and I do, I've read parts of that book and I've listened to the World Economic Forum conferences that they've done recently, and even going back a couple of years, and I realize this is what they're using COVID-19 for. They don't even hide it. They say COVID-19 is our best chance at performing the Great Reset that we want. They really see COVID-19 as their savior, and nothing worries them more than the end of COVID-19. So shut up, take the vaccine, and know that even after you've taken the vaccine, you still can't go outside, take off your mask, or open your business again. And if you've been paying attention, you've been hearing that too, that people have been saying on the news, leaders, well, even though you get the vaccine, you may need a second dose, it may not be perfect, so yada, yada, yada. There's all these different reasons why just because you take the vaccine doesn't mean you can go about your regular life. It doesn't mean you can take your mask off. It doesn't mean you can be around people. It doesn't mean you don't have to social distance. It doesn't mean you can open your business and live a normal life anymore. We still need you to act like a slave. We still need you to stay inside, follow orders, wear your mask, don't talk to other people, distance yourself, you know, from your friends and family and so on. And that, to me, is inhumane. The solutions, and I'll leave it here, the solutions that they're after are inhumane. And the only way they can continue to excuse their lack of humanity is by convincing people that there's no end in sight and there has to be a new normal because nothing can ever be the same again. You know, there's no herd immunity. It's not possible. Even if everyone gets vaccinated, it's still not possible. We have a new normal. We're going to live in constant fear of this pandemic for the ages. And those, folks, are my thoughts regarding the moving of the goalpost by the changing of definitions by the World Health Organization. Again, they're doing it because they're losing the debate, and they can't have the end of COVID-19 anytime soon. So let's move on to a couple other things. I'm already 20 minutes in or so. I want to touch on a couple other things here before I go. There were a few other things I wanted to talk about, so let me pull those up. One of them was, I want to talk about the either-or fallacy. I'll keep this short. You know, some of these shows, sometimes I'm not going to be replying or responding to anything in particular. I'm just going to be talking about maybe a logical fallacy. I've touched on this before, but the either-or fallacy is so common in political conversations. And here's what I want to encourage. I could go in many different directions on the either-or fallacy. It's also called the excluded middle fallacy. That's the more technical term. It goes by other names too, but I like the term either-or, which is basically the mistake of believing that there's only two options or two conclusions for any given question or arguments under debate, under discussion. So this happens a lot due to the left-right divide and due to the political fights taking place. This assumption is made that, well, if you don't agree with me, I'm on the left. If you don't agree with me, then that must mean you believe A or B. Like, I believe A because I'm on the left. And if you don't agree with me, then that must mean you believe B. And oftentimes, people don't just assume that it means you believe A or B, but that you believe a whole host of other things. Like, you believe the whole platform put forward by Trump or something, if you're on the right. There's not a lot of room in modern day discussions, I've noticed, for nuance and for people to realize that every other person is an individual. And really, even though there's so much polarization, there are still a growing number of people who are apolitical, who don't agree with either side, who really have valid critiques of both sides. I think maybe over the last 10, 15 years, that's starting to go away, especially in the era of Trump. People have become a lot more solidified in their polarized positions. But nevertheless, there are still people out there who have very nuanced beliefs, like myself. And even listening to this podcast, you would never probably know what I didn't tell you that I was a voluntarist, you would have no idea what I believe. And unless you go look that up and study it, you would have no idea just from listening to this show, especially because I oftentimes critique things from the perspective of, from arguments I don't even necessarily agree with. I'm just using those for the sake of argument, you know. But this whole idea, this either or fallacy, that again, I could focus on it in many different ways because it's harmful in many different ways. But the one issue I want to focus on is the idea that everyone is either in position A or position B. They're either on the team left or team right, and that somehow means that you can assume everything they believe. So, for example, perfect examples, I'll go on Twitter or social media, and I might say to somebody, I might give someone, I might push back on an idea, you know, like make a little logical argument or throw a question someone's way. And then the response I get is either a personal insult or something like, oh, you, says the person who probably believes that we should have a border wall, you know, oh, well, what do you think, a border wall is any better, you know, or something like that. I don't believe in border walls. I don't like the wall, you know, not a fan of that. I believe it's, and I'm not even going to get started in discussing what I believe and why. Let me just say I'm not personally for it. Now, they assume that about me because they assume I'm a Trump supporter because I question them. Or the same thing can happen in reverse. It happens with people on the right, too. I'll say something and I'll ask a question or provide some sort of little logical argument, and they almost never answer the argument on its own merits. They almost always say something that, trying to catch me in a hypocritical, oh, well, you probably believe this, you know, and it's something, you know, some extreme variation of something someone on the left believes. And I don't believe that, actually, and it has nothing to do with what I raised, with the issue I raised. People are so ready to put your argument and you as a person into a camp A or B, and it gets really old and it's really dangerous. And the reason why is because that leads to dehumanization very quickly. When you start to make massive assumptions about people, this using this either or fallacy, well, if you're not for me, you must be against me, and you must represent everything that I hate. This whole list of things I hate, you must represent all of that. And if you do, you're Hitler or you're Stalin, and I can't, you know, and I hate you, and you're less than human, and I wouldn't care if you died, you know. And that's the kind of mentality that people are accepting. The way that you hear that sort of dehumanistic speech from people on the right is they will call people on the left traitors in America, you know, because the assumption is that you're not a patriot if you're on the left, so you're a traitor. Well, the punishment for being a traitor, you know, the actual punishment, constitutionally speaking, is death. And, you know, there's a specific legal definition of a traitor. And most of the people on the right call traitors aren't traitors by that definition, but they don't care about that. For them, if you believe, if you're anti-Trump, or if you're on the left, if you believe the election wasn't rigged or whatever, you're a traitor. And the left does the same thing. They view Trump as a traitor, but they don't typically use that terminology. It's very patriotic terminology. Okay, they'll use more human rights terminology. So they will call you a racist or a Nazi or something like that, focusing more on human rights issues. And because of that, I mean, if you're the new Hitler, if you're the reincarnation of Hitler, or one of the followers of this new Hitler, then certainly you are less than human, right? I mean, most people would say if they could go back in time and get rid of Hitler before he did what he did, they would have done that. They've dehumanized Hitler, taken away his humanity, and justified that. And now they're willing to do that to people who they view as little Hitlers running around, which for many people on the left, many Democrats, is just pretty much all Republicans. So this dehumanization happens very quickly when you start getting into an either-or fallacy mindset. And that's where it starts. It starts at the level of argumentation. That's where it starts. It starts with the basic arguments over political issues. And then it goes from there to judging someone's humanity based on their arguments politically or based on your assumptions about what they believe politically. And that's the worst part. That's the worst part. Okay, well, that would be something that I could also discuss on my other show, Adam Speaking. New show I want to start that's just going to be me talking about whatever I feel like talking about, not always politics. It can be politics. Basically, I have a feeling I'm going to end up revolving around four things: freedom, wealth, happiness, and health. Those are the four things that have been floating around in my mind for years now. The categories of life, if you will, that I view life in: freedom, wealth, happiness, and health. I'll share this with you. Freedom has a lot to do with politics. Wealth has a lot to do with just personal finances, economics, and that sort of thing. Happiness has to do with psychology, and health has to do with physical health and well-being. So anyways, I'll let it go at that. Time to wrap up the show. AdamSpeaking.com is the website. In the show notes is the link to the Cash App. If you have the Cash App, it's a great way to donate. If you want to donate to the show for whatever reason, hit the Cash App button, not the button, but the link in the show notes, and it'll open up the app. It'll go to the website probably and then redirect you to the app. And then you can, if you use the Cash App, which is awesome for sending money, you can send me a donation if you feel, prompted to do that. If you feel like that might be a good idea for whatever reason. And if you do and you have Bitcoin, I take Bitcoin. Okay. Now that Bitcoin is like skyrocketed to the moon, I'm like, okay, give me Bitcoin. I'm not, if I have an option, Bitcoin. And if you don't own Bitcoin, get some Bitcoin. I wasn't that hot on it 6 months ago because it was, just was doing okay. And I wasn't ever sure if it was really gonna, I always kind of believed in it conceptually and everything, but it's like, I wasn't sure. Now that I see where it's going and I see these other investment groups and big institutional investors getting into using it as a store of value, I'm like, okay. Other people are finally catching on to the fact that it's the real deal. This is good. Now it's going to go somewhere. So I'm happy to see that Bitcoin is doing very well and that my investment in that is doing really well. And if you want to donate to the show, I prefer Bitcoin. And you can send people Bitcoin in the Cash App. And I need to put my wallet address on there so people can do that. I forgot about that. Put in the show notes or whatever. Okay, thank you very much. I'll catch you in the next few days with another episode. You guys remember, find something true, good, and beautiful to focus on. Find it outside of politics because you won't find it here. Peace.